Book my super pocket diddly machine with me Dabu Frey.
Spoilers?
Check.
Mature language?
Check.
Should listeners be advised?
Check.
Count Dracula.
There's a new Red Wolf series.
Yeah, I picked up the first issue. It was okay.
Okay. I just found out about that. I was like, really? They're bringing this guy back?
I assume it has something to do with representation, or maybe they just want to maintain the trademark because he had a series back in the 70s. Maybe they just wanted to renew that trademark. But
I think so, because I was talking to some friends about after the whole, I don't know why we actually have to call this a controversy, but after the hiring of the actor for Iron Fist, somebody was talking about like who are, because I've always made the point that Marvel has a great shelf of Black and African American heroes, like some of my favorites, but they don't have a whole lot of great Latino or Hispanic characters.
Really
or
bad
Asians.
Latinos.
It's like somebody was asking me, like, who are they? I was like, well, there's a guy named White Tiger who's a fourth-rate Daredevil
and dead.
Yeah. I was like a Firebird girl from the George Perez Kurt Busiek run of the Avengers that I remember.
I remember Silverclaw, which is from that
Silverclaw,
time period.
Am I confusing her with Fire?
And then Flamebird was from the West Coast Avengers, and she was okay. Englehart and Al Milgrom, if I recall correctly. She was the evangelical, she was a Catholic.
I was conflating those two in my head.
I always think of El Aguilar, who is a Zorro riff that popped up in Power Man and Iron Fist as one of the more embarrassing examples. He's Marvel's vibe.
Right, right. And then on the Asian side, I mean, Shang-Chi, who is a pretty deliberate Bruce Lee clone, but I think enough time has passed where Bruce Lee, I don't think he's steeped in the public consciousness the way he used to be. So I think they could actually do a Shang-Chi Master of Kung Fu type of movie or TV show or something and not seem like such an obvious ripoff. I think their target audience wouldn't be distracted by that necessarily.
Yeah, well, and also he was an update of Robert Carradine's character from Kung Fu, who was supposed to be played by Bruce Lee initially anyway. I think that maybe the whole Sax Rohmer or Fu Manchu thing might have been an issue there as well, because it's tough to bring up Shang-Chi without bringing up all the Yellow Peril stuff that he was wrapped up in. If you recall, I think it was Englehart and Jim Starlin that created that character, and they immediately abandoned the character when Stan Lee got the rights to Fu Manchu and forced them to use it in that property. Whoa, this is now officially toxic. We're not writing this anymore. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
But it's great because that's how you ended up with Paul Galassi and Doug Minch doing the book.
But getting back, I mean, so in that case, if you want somebody to represent the Hispanic culture or Latino, I mean, it's not quite the same thing, but in terms of representing the American Southwest Native Americans, I think Red Wolf is a pretty good representative who's unique. He could be a fun character.
Yeah, he's kind of problematic too, though, because he was running around bare-chested. He was running around shooting bow and arrows. He embodies a lot of stereotypes, and in particular, trying to bring that unaltered version to, I think it was 2014 when that promotional image first came up. I can see where a lot of people like raised some hackles. I don't know how many actual Native people were pissed off about that. I think it was maybe more social justice warrior kind of thing going on. There was like, hey, he looks like a redskin. What's Marvel thinking? But then they go and they put him in cowboy clothes for the revamp, and he looks boring. He doesn't look like anything right now. I'm hoping he's going to have a costume later on. It seems like they're indicating that on those sort of minimalist covers they're doing, but I don't think they've reflected in the actual stories yet.
They should buy the rights to Brave Star. Did you ever see that cartoon in the 80s or 90s? It was like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon where he was this frontier marshal, but it was sort of like a post-apocalyptic future Western, and he could have the powers of these four different animals. Strength of a bear, speed of a cheetah or something.
Yeah. No, I remember Brave Star. I liked him pretty well.
Yeah,
he was the only non-white they managed to get through, because originally they wanted to have Black Star be black as well.
Yeah.
But by the time it made it to CBS, they decided that they were going to be more commercial to make him an ambiguously white guy, sort of like tan looking. But yeah, no, Brave Star was cool, and I wouldn't mind seeing a Black Star that was actually black too, or at least mixed, which you could kind of play off. Like I said, he was kind of tan looking.
Yeah. I always interpreted him as either part Native American or of Hispanic or Mexican descent. That was the way I interpreted it when I was a kid.
Yeah, they left it ambiguous enough to where you could do that. Yeah, I had the action figures, and I remember him being pretty dark compared to old He-Man.
Hey, Diablo Frank, what are we talking about this evening, buddy?
Marvel Chillers 3, 5, 6, and 7.
Featuring?
Tigra the Werewoman. The Werewoman.
Which, as you explained in our other Tigra podcast, means?
Woman-woman?
Woman-woman.
Or actually man-woman.
Man-woman, right.
Let's see.
Because werewolf means man-wolf.
Right.
So she should technically be something else.
Yeah. So we had the four-issue cat series.
Editor's note, see the Marvel Superheroes podcast episode 12.
Beware the claws of the cat.
The Cat number one came out November of 1972. Stan Lee is the one who's credited with creating the characters. Roy Thomas took over as editor-in-chief at Marvel in the early 70s, I believe. But he was giving orders by Stan that they wanted to diversify the line. Roy Thomas really felt like if you're going to do female heroes, you need to actually have some female creators. One of their secretaries, Linda Feicht, had tried to break in as a writer. And Stan also got Marie Severin, who is one of the most accomplished Silver Age artist at Marvel, regardless of gender.
And then we had Giant Size Werewolf by Night number 2, which featured the switch from the cat to Tigra.
Yep.
Editor's note, see the Marvel Superheroes podcast episode 15.
Tigra the Werewolf. Today we're going to cover Giant Size Creatures number 1, featuring Werewolf by Night and the introduction of Tigra the Werewolf. Tony Isabella, he's trying to think of a new horror concept. How about a woman who turns into a cat? And he thought out this whole mythology behind it and how it worked. And while he was trying to come up with a name for the character he's creating, he thought back to the cat. I was like, well, just made up Greer Nelson. The basic design of the character was by Gil Kane, but pretty much the entire Marvel bullpen had a hand in creating a character. John Romita is supposed to have had some input into that. Don Perlin, a bunch of other folks.
What a strange, twisted way to get to where we're at. I just had no idea Tigra's first appearance was in Werewolf by Night, Giant Size number 1. Like, it seems so strange.
And this was really quick, too, because her first appearance came out, if I recall correctly, 74, 75. So it was a year from the original Cat series. From the end of the series, a very short turnaround before they decided, we're just going to upend this character and come out with a completely different take on
it. Wow. I guess I didn't realize that it was that quick turn. Man, they really just gave up on the cat, huh? Greer is a great character. So many times, the alternate ego is normally garbage and it's secondary to the superhero. For God's sakes, put the suit on and go fight somebody. Whereas Greer Grant was an extremely likable character. Her struggles as a woman after her husband passed away was just as interesting, and how she was going to start getting her life put back together was as interesting as anything she was going to do in the cat outfit. It makes sense to me that somebody would say, you know what, we've got a really good character established, the book bombed out, let's just ditch the whole superhero bit, costume changing bit, and let's just go weird with it.
And then we did Monsters Unleashed magazine number 10, which featured a tiger story.
Yep.
And then she had a cameo in Avengers 144. And as I recall, you've been reading the Avengers story arc that introduced Hellcat, and Tigra tied into that. And that was one of those issues.
Correct.
So that means that we're pretty much gone in chronological order up for the next appearance. Although we're not going to cover issue number 4 of Marvel Chillers because there was a fill-in issue written by Chris Claremont featuring Kraven the Hunter.
Interesting.
Editor's note, see the Marvel Superheroes podcast episode 62. Tigra 2-in-1 featuring Spider-Man and the Thing.
So you don't know anything about Tigra, huh?
Nope.
So you've literally read like your first Tigra comic ever today.
Yes.
Huh, okay. Did you listen to the Tigra episode of the Marvel Superheroes podcast?
No.
Motherfucker.
I'm being honest. I don't
Okay, but you were in the cat episode though.
Yeah, I remember the cat episode, yeah.
This is the same girl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God, is she evolving like a fucking Pokemon now and shit?
So we're trying to pick up kind of where we left off. And the first of the titles is Marvel Chillers number 4 by Chris Claremont, Frank Robbins, and a surprisingly unobtrusive Vince Coletta. Marvel 2-in-1 number 19. It's from 1976. The story is called Claws of the Cougar. It's by Bill Mantlow, Sal Buscema, Don Heck. I read this story at your birthday.
Okay.
I got bored and I brought some comics with me and I just read it during...
That's right. My birthday was that boring.
Tigra's appearances from Fantastic Four number 177 through 186, covered dated December 1976 through September 1977.
Paging Dr. Ange. Paging Dr. Ange.
Good morning.
And Marvel Team-Up number 67, cover dated March 1978 by Chris Claremont, John Byrne, and Dave Hunt. So the story's called Tigra, Tigra, Burning Bright, and go to Marvel Premiere featuring Tigra the Feline Fury, issue number 42 from 1978.
Okay.
And then you get to the interiors, it's called Nightmares Evolution. The plot is by John Warner. Oh, and Ed Hennigan. The art is by Mike Vosburgh and Ernie Chan. And Ernie Chan really dominates with his inks. It looks like an Ernie Chan story to me. But now we're moving on to this one you read.
Oh, dude, it wasn't even worth it, man.
Marvel Team-Up is Spider-Man's Team-Up book. This is issue number 125, cover dated January 1983 by J.M. DeMatteis. Breakdowns by Cary Grammel. Full inks, finished art by Mike Esposito. The story is called Yesterday and Today. So it's kind of funny because this Marvel Chillers, the first two issues were featured a character called Modred the Mystic, who, if I remember correctly, because my brother had a copy of the first issue when we were kids, he'd like been placed in like a Rip Van Winkle like coma, and then he was a medieval sorcerer, and he wakes up in modern times. And at first he seems like a good guy, but pretty quickly they switched him over to being a bad guy and popped up in various comics. So he got the first two issues of Marvel Chillers, and I guess they decided to switch out the format and turn it into the anthology series that Tiger would be covering. And she was the star of the book for its short run. It only lasted the 7 issues. So this first issue, which they made a point of saying it's the premier issue, even though it had number 3 on it, because it was, came out in 1975. The story was called Holocaust Is Our Business, and it involved a group of people called the Rat Pack, who were apparently like scavengers of technology who wore all green outfits, and they had previously fought Captain Marvel around issue 20 of his series. So I think that was back during the Thomas Gil Kane run of the book.
Give me the creative team. Let's go.
Okay, the creative team is Tony Isabella and Will Muneau. Muneau would go on to co-create the DN Agents with Mark Evanier, and then he would work extensively in animation as well. But he did a little bit of comic work, and I think this is some of his earliest work. What'd you think of the art?
I thought it was pretty stuff.
Yeah. So what's the story? Or do you want me to tell the story? I'll tell the story right quick because I got the tablet in front of me.
Okay.
So the Rat Pack throw knockout gas into a crowd. There's some cops who are trying to stop them, and one of the guys murders a cop. And these guys, they don't have actual names. The Rat Pack is like number 1 through number 5. And there's already infighting amongst them because one of the people is like, wow, you didn't really need to kill a cop. Look, I just used my karate skills to beat this guy. We had the same effect, and we don't have a murder rap added to our list. And the guy who killed the cop's like, yeah, but my guy ain't going to get up again. And so they steal something, but it's vague what it is that they steal. And some more police come to check out the bystanders who have been knocked out by this gas. And one of them turns out to be a cat man. So they arrest him, assuming that he's part of the Rat Pack. Meanwhile, Dr. Tomolo and Tigra are traveling to... Did they say where this takes place?
They do say where. It's
somewhere in California. It's a sleepy Southern California city, whichever one it is. They're going to try to find one of the cat people to see if they would be able to change Tigra back to a human form so she could go back and forth from human to Tigra. And unfortunately, it turns out that the guy that they were looking for, Dr. Leon, wasn't it?
Yep.
Well, he was the werecat that got caught in the gassing by the Rat Pack. So now they have an incentive to find out what happened with him. There's also a cool sequence where they're going to meet a lawyer that has helped the cat people over the years. Tigra's supposed to be in disguise. She's just got a lot of clothing on. And Tigra's like, nobody's even giving me a second glance. And meanwhile, Will Muneau draws this ass shot of her, a male bystander kind of giving her the side eye and really like taking in her. Like
giving a very long second glance as she says, nobody's giving me a second glance.
So they find out that Dr. Leon's in jail. Tigra scales the side of the prison and uses acid that I guess she got from Dr. Tumalo and burns the bars and manages to carry Dr. Leon to safety, who seems like a pretty cool cat, no pun intended.
Yeah, he seems pretty chill.
But then the Rat Pack shows up, and they were apparently getting involved in some other incident that attracted police attention. So Tiger goes to try to combat them, and it does a cool sequence where she grabs one and tosses them, you know, like a rag doll. And then she gets into a fight with the female member of the team, number 2, who's quite good at the martial arts. When she's fighting 2 of them, she manages to make one of the guys stab the other guy with a knife, and it turns out that they're brothers, and so the brother's really pissed off at her. Then finally, while she's made short work of the Rat Pack, then she runs into their leader, who looks like some dude out of a Mad Max type movie. Got this long brown hair.
It's like
Angar
the Screamer, kind of.
Yeah, kind of, but bulkier, like beefier.
Yeah.
Black eyes with pinpoint white portions to them. And so he's fighting Tigra. The fight doesn't last long. He basically laughs at her face as they're struggling, and she just weakens and falls out, left behind as though she didn't matter anymore. This leader guy, Joshua Plague, is just like, eh, she doesn't matter. Leave her alone. Do what I tell you to. And so she gets up at the end, and she's kind of groggy, and she catches their scent again and goes after them. And meanwhile, it turns out there's been a massacre that had occurred in an Indian reservation because the Rat Pack was trying to find something there, although again, they're kind of vague about what it was. And this attracts the attention of the Native American hero Red Wolf with his trusty sidekick Lobo the Wolf. I thought that was a really nice looking shot at the end. It kind of reminded me of that Paul Gillespie style of anatomy from that time period, like Masters of Kung Fu, the earlier issues.
I thought that whole issue looked fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good looking book.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes the figures were a little squat looking.
Yeah.
Like a little smaller than they ought to have been, but it had a nice style to it. It's flashy.
Well, and I like how all of the Rat Pack, they kind of wear these masks, these super tight masks, mm-hmm. but he really makes sure that you can see their mouths.
Yeah.
Like it's just like almost pantyhose pulled over, like uh-huh. it's sheer enough that you can really see detail in their mouths. Very cool effect when they're yelling at each other and screaming. It was really pretty cool.
For a lot of guys in head to toe green, they seemed cool because of how they were drawn.
Yes.
And I got to say too, the female member, they did a good job of showing her in action. I mean, Will Muneau is, I think, known for drawing really nice looking female figures, but I liked that in her fighting, she still looked like the anatomy was correct. It looked like her body was moving in the way it ought to while doing roundhouse kicks and stuff.
Yes. And she was throwing roundhouse kicks, full on martial arts ninja kicks and stuff.
Yeah. Do you want to pick up with the next one?
Yep. So it's not really the next one, right? This is issue 5.
Right. So issue number 4 is the fill in, which again, it's kind of sad. You get one issue into a multi issue arc, and then you drop in this fill in by a different creative team.
So this picks up with Tigra chasing after Joshua Plague and the Rat Pack.
Right. Although she does have a quick flashback to the Kraven appearance, but it's only in a caption box. So my suspicion is they dropped that caption box in after this issue was in the works to cover for the fill-in.
For the one fill-in issue.
And don't they talk a little bit about her origins in there too?
Do they? Did I miss
or is it just
that?
A recap of the story?
I think it's kind of just a recap of the story.
Okay.
I think these pages stuck together when I read them. So I missed this. But yeah, it looks like I didn't need any of it because that's all
recap.
That's all recap. Hey, nice job. Anyway, so she's on their tail and two members of the Rat Pack. Is it the male and the female? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's number one and number two right now.
It's one and two.
The guy who's more murderous and is more of a wild card, where two is the female martial artist.
And I guess it's because number one technically started the Rat Pack.
Right, right. He'd been replaced by Joshua Plague and wasn't happy about it and often questioned orders while continuing to follow them.
Right. So they're kind of flying in their little hover car and they spot Tigra. So they're like, let's just run this chick over. So they just kind of fly at her, miss because she's Tigra, and dodges them, which leads to number two, the hot female Rat Pack member, jumping out and start trying to go toe-to-toe with Tigra. And there's a great, they do a good job, at least in these first two issues, of, and they did this a lot in the other Tigra stuff we've read. Well, she'll start to lose it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she goes really, feral.
She fades into that feral thought. So there's this one scene where she gets kicked in the head as she's sort of recovering from it. Agent number two, or Rat Pack number two, starts coming at her, and she reaches out with her clawed hand at the last second, sort of snaps back to reality and retracts the nails, but has still scratched from forehead all the way down woman's face.
I don't think it was scratched. I think what you see, if you look at her, she's got this crosshatch and makes it look like it's bruised. Like she pulled the claws in just in time, so instead of sinking claws into her brain, bruised up the sides of her face and then ripped the mask
through
her fingers.
That's what I'm saying. So instead of ripping skin and face,
it's just
ripped mask.
Yeah.
Because she caught herself at the last second.
But I like how it looks. She still looks battle damaged. She looks like essentially punched with an open hand.
Right. As that battle continues to take place, number two jumps from behind and gasses her. So you think, oh damn, Tigra just got knocked out again. But with her cat-like smell, she could tell that there was a gas gun in the area and had already been holding her breath. So there's a really good scene as the dude starts to
exposit.
Right. Like take her. She does this spinning, and I don't know if that's a groin kick or what it is, but he goes, oof, and then, oh my God. And again, it's really good because even though he's got a masked face,
yeah, you can see him.
You can see his mouth wide open going, oh my God. Like, very cool the way the effect they use, even though their faces are covered in masks. He does an excellent job of portraying the emotion.
I like how they have this ad too for these things. What are they called? Comic book protectors? And basically it's one of those plastic sleeves like you see in the library for their magazines, but made specifically for comics, and they give you a page of stickers so you can decorate them if you'd like.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
So I assume in the days before bags and boards had caught on, and they were showing you some alternative methods of protecting your comics.
So who ended up knocking her out? Damn it, did I miss it? Oh yeah, yeah. She busts up number one. One of the other guys sneaks up behind her and just basically clubs her in the back of the head and quote unquote turns out the lights. So they pick her up and take her back to their main lair. And then we flash over to Red Wolf's story, who in typical Native American fashion is being harassed by the local police because they think that he's part. Basically, that these terrible police officers think that anybody they get their hands on must have been part of the Rat Pack. They think that was his name Leon
was a Rat Pack
man, was a Rat Pack member. And now they think that Red Wolf's a Rat Pack member. So there's a freaking awesome line here where they're talking to the lawyer that we met in the first issue. And he's saying, oh, hi, Red Wolf. Because the police confirm with the Avengers that Red Wolf's legit, and they kind of let him go.
Because this is the second appearance of the William Tall Trees Red Wolf, who debuted in a two-issue story arc in the Avengers.
Editor's note, see the Marvel Superheroes podcast episode 80, Becoming of Red Wolf.
So he says, I'm Jules Banyan, Red Wolf. I acted on occasion as legal counsel for the Indians, or for legal consultant for the Indians. He's like, then you share our grief, Mr. Bannon. Or Banyan?
I think it's Banyan.
Banyan? And he goes, I don't know why the Rat Pack struck here. The tribe was really quite poor. I doubt if they had anything of any real value. And he goes, and Red Wolf goes, except for their beliefs, their heritage, their proud way of life. And he's like, I didn't mean, want to get away? Like, that's not what I meant. And then he says, and one more thing, the Soul Catcher, which we find out is sort of We fade over.
Well, they keep referring to it as a statue, but it looks more like a rectangular baton thing.
It's like a broke-ass cosmic control rod.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. It kind of looks like a flute.
Flute case.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of a staff. Maybe there's like a head at the top of it. Whatever it is.
We're spending a lot of time on this.
Yeah, we're spending a lot of time on this thing. The statue has been taken. So that's, and that's when we fade to a panel that has, what's this guy's name? Plague?
Yeah, Joshua Plague.
Joshua Plague. He's holding his hand.
That's one of those names I've made a point to remember because it reminds me of Josiah Power from the Power Company book that DC put out. Both the names are ridiculous, but Joshua Plague somehow manages to be even more ridiculous.
Joshua Plague and the Rat Pack. So anyway, Red Wolf ends that page with, my people were murdered by whoever took the soul catcher, Mr. Banyan, and by the great spirit, their death shall not go unavenged.
By the way, it's strongly insinuated that Joanne Tumolo and this Banyan lawyer had a thing in college. And apparently he's been helping the cat people since college. And I think he's been helping himself to that pussy since college.
Okay, so for listeners at home, that was a sort of strange cat pun Frank tried to work in there. Did you catch that? Yeah. Now back to our regularly scheduled podcast. So I didn't realize his horse's name was he says Ho Ranger and rides.
Right.
On. Really?
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't remember the horse being named previously. Lobo is like a key part in all the Red Wolf stories, but I don't really remember the horse that well.
But he mentions, though, I spotted this cat chick about to head out of here. Lobo's got her scent. Lobo can track anything once he gets it scent. So we're out of here. Peace out. And Dr. Tumulo's like, oh shit, that's Tigra. He's going after her. Okay, so from there, we get to the home base of Mr. Plague and the Rat Pack, and they're all basically arguing about how, you know, how number one was going way too aggressive with it, and number six or number five just like, dude, come on, man, you're just have it out for this whole group because you still think you should be in charge, and guess what, it's never gonna happen, you need to chill out. And then what's his name, Plague, is like, no, I told number five to go out there and do that. And he was like, what's we're ranked 1 through 5, it's a ranking, you need to keep the ranking, that's the right. Whole point of the
chain
ranking.
Of command,
the chain of command, Plague. And he's like, look, dude, sure, you founded this group, and that's why you're number one, but you know, you were just getting trashed by Captain Marvel before I got over here, and now we're like legit criminals, so you need to check your shit. It's like he just acquired them for the branding. Uh-huh. It's like his name was already Joshua Plague.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I need to have some sort of rat themed crew.
Right.
And found them and just bought them on the cheap.
Yeah, they would have totally been a punk band though. Joshua Plague and the Rat Pack.
Oh my god.
Total punk band.
A really terrible punk band.
Yeah. Well, because they stole their name from Sinatra's group.
All right. That's a different type of Rat Pack.
Yeah.
So anyway, Tigra, of course, you're seeing her inner monologue where she's like, yeah, you know, I woke up from my, you know, being clubbing. Knocked out a long time ago, but this conversation is getting pretty interesting, so I'm just going to chill here and listen to it.
Yeah, I like that Greer Nelson still has her cat voice in these issues, where I felt like they kind of got a little far from the character in the Monsters Unleashed story especially, but even in the Werewolf by Night's tale, where this one felt the most like it was the continuation of the cat series. She still felt more like that character in this story than she did in some of those previous ones.
Yeah.
And I guess part of it is she's got more control over the cat self. She isn't going quite as crazy feral.
So as they were like, well, what are you going to do to... So basically they were like, okay, we've kind of been found out here. We're going to need to blow this whole joint up. So we've already put some bombs around. We're just going to blow it up. Set it for like 20 minutes, and they're like, what do you want us to do with this cat lady? He's like, we'll go chain her up, because they already think that she's sort of part of our crew, so they're going to find her body here after we blow this place up, and you know, that maybe that'll take them off our trail for a little bit. So they start to take her away. Again, she's actually awake. They think she's still in a coma, so then she just starts trashing these guys. Until our good friend, Joshua Plague, comes in with this weird soul catcher statue, and has some dope Kirby bubbles all around him as he blasts her. And kind of in the meantime, you kind of see a little bit of, who's there? It's between number 2 and number 4, and they're sort of like, what's going on here, number 4? All these thefts of experimental serums, Joshua's knowing who this Tigra is when none of us did, now these strange powers that he's suddenly exhibiting. Just what or who is he? Very good question, coming from his own crew.
Right.
Anyway, so they're getting ready to flee the base before the bombs go off, because now that she's legit knocked out, they're like, let's just go, the place is going to blow up. And they notice that Red Wolf is approaching, and it's like, yeah, you know what, by the time he finds the secret entrance, it'll be about 20 minutes, so set the bombs for 20 minutes. So he'll get in here, and the place will
get blown up real good, yeah.
Right, along take them with both Tigra.
Although there is a bit of a Scott Evil, well, why don't you just kill Tigra now? You know, yeah, why does she have to blow up?
It happened like 3 or 4, they've knocked her out like 4 times in these right. 2 issues. So they're like, all right, cool, let's roll. So they roll out, and Tigra's out cold, and she's got these crazy like handcuff things on. They're like
the serious manacle things, but they look kind of like the posts that you'd have at a parking spot, like the ones that come out of the ground.
They're like canisters around her hands that are chained to this thing. So her being Tigra and being stronger than the average female, I guess, she
or is cat. Stronger than both cats and females.
There you go.
And she, female cats.
Probably combined. She's able to like tug on them until the chains break. And as soon as she gets out of those, she still has the canister on her hands. She's just chained. She has broke the chains that were chaining her to wherever she was chained to. Red Wolf comes in and starts throwing axes at her. And this was a pretty good, I like this panel. It says, it was one of those magic moments. Boy meets girl. Boy throws tomahawk at girl. That's funny. Girl doesn't get a chance to warn boy that an explosion that promises to blow them all to Helsinki. And I still couldn't outrun that mocking, unearthly laughter of Joshua Plague. To be continued.
It's J.L. May. We're covering the Silver Age.
This J.L. May. A comic event from Mark Wade.
We're crossovering a podcast. There's 12 of us involved.
Get it in your ear holes, this JL May.
We'll tell you all about the Silver Age. It's not great,
but it's okay.
We really have to warn you. It has a controversial one.
Where Mark Miller wrote the lead.
But it also has some good stuff. Deep dark style, age metal man.
Challenges of the unknown.
Green Lantern, Flash, Patrol of Doom.
The Seven Soldiers of Victory are in there too!
The annual JL May event is upon us once more. In 2018, we're reading The Silver Age from 2001. The journey begins in the podcast Justice's First Dawn and continues in the shows Relatively Geeky, Coffee and Comics, Supermates, Waiting for Doom, Idlehead of Diablo, The Longbox Crusade, The Lantern Cast, Batgirl to Oracle, Comic Reflections, Cosmic Treadmill, The Fire and Water Podcast.
Do you know it's JMA at all?
We checked the date.
It came out in 2000.
We got it right.
And we're ready for some fun.
Do you know it's JMA?
It all begins this May.
Read the books.
Listen to the podcast too.
Read the books.
Listen to the podcast too.
Read the books.
Let them know it's
JLMA. Something, something.
So next up is Marvel Chillers number 6, Night of the Wolf, which starts in the same place where the previous issue ended with the tomahawk being thrown at Tigra and Red Wolf screaming, "Die, werewolf, die!" And I like, too, on the cover there's a black burst with white lettering that reads, "It's the Marvel Age of Comics, Phase 2. So apparently these phases go back to at least 76. So you open it up and you got this gorgeous splash page and a bit of a surprise on the art front.
Yep.
Who would that be?
John Byrne.
You know, I liked Will Munoz. I've got no problem with continuing this book with his artwork, but then bam, John Byrne, not quite at his peak yet, but just gorgeous artwork though. He's really good at drawing Tigra, and it's only the males that look a little off sometimes.
But I will say, this next page you're about to flip to, two page spread of, it's sort of like you're looking
at a profile of Red Wolf that fills the entire right hand page with a corner devoted to a very demonic looking Lobo. Then his arm is sweeping into the left hand page. The tomahawk is being thrown towards Tigra, who's in a very small bottom bottom left-hand corner, so you get the sense of you're seeing this almost from Red Wolf's perspective.
Like, over his shoulder as he's throwing the tomahawk down the hallway at her, but it's a two-page spread. Awesome perspective.
Yeah.
You kind of just stare at this two-page spread, trying to take it all in. It was terrific. Whereas the prior artist, very unique looking, all the characters are very attractive, but pretty standard comic book. As far as layouts go, nothing too... I mean, some of his splash pages were pretty cool, but it would just be kind of like an oversized panel, whereas this is sort of the perspective used
there's
on this
page. There's a bigness to it. There's a wide screen quality to it.
Absolutely.
And it gives you a real sense of the force with which Red Wolf is throwing this tomahawk, and he just screams, "Beware, woman! A Wyodota guide my throw! Let Red Wolf's aim be true!" And Trigra is still chained up. She has one arm. Both hands are in manacles. One of them is still chained to a wall, so she's trying to get out of the way of this thing, but she can't quite do it. She knows it, and she has the sinking sensation, like, I can't do anything about what's about to happen. But what happens is the tomahawk splits the chains and frees her, allowing her to smash her manacles off of her hands. She turns ready for combat, only to find a boy and his dog. "You are fortunate, woman. Your foolishly squirming nearly cost your life. I feared you would lunge into the path of my tomahawk."
"You meant to free me?"
"Of course. I would not have thrown with such force merely to kill you." I just like that.
Yeah, it was good.
Then there's a rumbling because the explosions are starting to detonate within the building. So Tigra and Red Wolf have to really move those moccasins down the hallway. And they're dodging all these large chunks of debris that keeps falling in their way.
Well, and I like that as everything is starting to fall apart. Red Wolf's like, "You couldn't have said something? Like, you didn't say anything?"
Over here betting Lobo and trying to be all chill, and you could have mentioned the place is about to explode.
Yeah.
But they find this Logan's Run sort of subway transport thing that the Rat Pack had been using to go to and from their base, and so they all pile in and fly off into this thing. Meanwhile, Dr. Tumalo, what is that fella's name again?
Starts with a B.
Jules Banyan, the lawyer friend, and Professor Lee are talking about the situation and giving us a little bit of flashback action in case we pick this up off the newsstand without having read any previous issues. I bought this book probably around 91, 92. I got this out of a back issue bin because I was a fan of Red Wolf, and so I hadn't read any issues prior to this one, so that sort of thing came in handy. Also want to mention before we forget that they advertise in one page Mighty Marvel mirrors. And I don't know if you remember this, but they used to make these little bitty mirrors, and they'd have print on the mirrors, really big with heavy metal album covers, where you'd have parts of mirror and then the rest of it would be obscured by artwork from the albums, or like a Def Leppard logo or something like that. I won one at a state fair one time. But these have Spider-Man swinging through the city, and then the Fantastic Four is flaming one mirror. There's one where Captain America's shield's framed the mirror, and there's that mad bomb shot of Jack Kirby's cap coming at you. Now there's Spider-Man and a Hulk one. I would like to see one of those. I wonder if there's any out there that we could take a look at. That'd be cool to see in the actual form rather than just these illustrations.
Definitely we'd have to hit up eBay for that.
Things come to a head between Number One and Josiah Plague.
Wait. Before you go farther, you have to read that top panel on that left page.
Tumalo?
Yes, sir.
"There must be more to those raiders than what is apparent on the surface, and that's what worries me."
And then Banyan says, "Maybe some discreet poking about by Jules Banyan will turn up something, Joanne. I'll try."
That's total sexual innuendo.
Total. I told you, he's down for that pussy.
Yeah.
But as he leaves, he thinks to himself that he's got an appointment with Joshua. So in fact, old Banyan's been working with Joshua this whole time, skeevy bastard. And so things come to a head between Number One and Josiah Plague. So Plague uses the Soul Catcher to lay a smackdown on the entire team. He's essentially saying, "I don't need you anymore, and I can kill you with the raw power this device gives me." The only one he's not blowing up is Number Five, his buddy boy, who's been working with him, and who points out that Tigra is coming right at him in full fury. Oh, hey, look, an ad for Captain America's Bicentennial Battles. Oh, God, and this Superheroes Assemble subscription ad. I used to see this all the time in comics when I was a kid. I had a lot of issues from this time period that were given to me. It's the subscription ad with Star-Lord, Captain Marvel, Conan, looks like a Kirby Iron Man, Human Torch, looks like a Gil Kane Daredevil, probably a Marie Severin Hulk, a John Romita Spider-Man, a Frank Bruner Howard the Duck, Romita Captain America, and probably a Romita Thor.
Yeah, that's a pretty common ad.
You know, it's just great seeing that collection of characters and that variety of artists. The four pages consecutive ads aside, nice editing there. Red Wolf and Tiger
Tigro start going after the two groups of bad guys. Red Wolf got his hands full battling Number Five specifically. And with a little help from Lobo, it's revealed that Number Five is actually a robot. And that's why he's so loyal and so much more powerful than the other members of the team. Josiah Power starts trying to do his laughter thing against Tigro again to knock her out. Plague, sorry.
Yeah.
And it turns out that it's not the laughter that's getting to her. It's his hypnotic powers. And she manages to shake it off briefly. So he decides that it's time to cast aside all disguises. And it's revealed that Joshua Plague is actually the Super Skrull. And the issue ends with a caption of Tigra saying, "Hoo boy." And Burns' Super Skrull is kind of fucked up on
like,
that.
It looks like Aaron Clarkson drew that.
His face is all asymmetrical and it's...
Well, and look at where the Human Torch arm is coming from. And that, isn't that weird?
That's kind of awkward.
It looks like somebody's handing him the... Yeah, very strange.
Yeah. Well, Frank Springer inked this. I think that might be a contributing factor, but it's still early Burn. He's still kind of working out the details. Oh, and I got to point out too, there's a full page ad here that's one of those comic strip ads for the G.I. Joe character, Bullet Man the Human Bullet. That's another one that I remember fondly from childhood. I got to go on eBay and see if I can find one of those too. Yeah. I wouldn't actually like buy it. I just want to see a picture of it.
Yeah.
There's probably like a G.I. Joe museum online where you can just look at this stuff. But I just love the comic strip ads. It's something that it's kind of a lost art. I think that if Nick Lachey had a little comic book adventure in his little Twix ad instead of just being inexplicable and stupid, the people would be more receptive to the whole thing where advertisements are breaking in halfway through a page on DC Comics' story. I don't know if you heard about that.
I have not.
But yeah, you know the guy who used to be married to Jessica Simpson who's completely irrelevant to pop culture these days?
Maybe?
Pitching for
Tony
Twix.
Romo?
No, Nick Lachey.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
I think he was a singer. So anyway, so they're taking two pages of DC Comics art and it's actually one page and they split it into two pages and on the bottom of the page it's just an advertisement for Twix where Lachey and his evil twin are arguing over which Twix is more tasty, which I've always thought was like a really dumbass ad campaign, and this just compounds the stupidity.
When did these occur?
Recent months, like a month or so ago. Really? A lot of uproar about it. People really didn't like their comics being interrupted in that way.
Yeah, that would be kind of stupid.
They'll end up having an adventure fighting his evil twin and maybe involve Hostess Pies and we'd all be loving it.
Probably. Issue number 7 of Marvel Chillers featuring Tigra the Werewoman. Alright, so this is the final issue.
Yeah, they're real clear about that. There's an editorial piece in there that basically says, hey, the numbers weren't there. And there's a big thing at the end of the book where they're like, hey, she's gone on the shelf for a while, but we're going to find another place for her because Roy likes her.
Yep.
Roy Thomas, the editor, by the way.
So this
did he edit this issue?
No, Archie did.
Okay. And Marv Wolfman edited the first part, which was kind of appropriate.
Yeah. So last issue, we had Isabella.
Joined by John Byrne.
This issue is Jim Shooter. On writing with George Tuska on art.
And Sal Trapini doing the inks. So the entire creative team has changed for the last part of the story.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
And suspicious, because you got to wonder, well, if the guys who started the book didn't finish the story, why would that be?
Right.
So maybe because they're trying to wrap everything up in this one last issue, where they had some sort of mega arc that didn't come to fruition?
Yeah, this is already sort of a bizarre mix of characters as it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we pick up the last one left off. The Super Skrull has revealed himself.
Not nearly as pretty of a Super Skrull.
Well, I don't think that Super Skrull by Byrne was very good. I actually think this Tuscan one's better.
You like the Tuscan one better?
Yeah. He's got these weird, crazy, demonic eyes, which is kind of cool. The majority of this issue is just a knockdown drag out with Red Wolf and Number Five, the android.
The robot, yeah.
And Tigra and the Super Skrull. So Super Skrull has the Soul Catcher, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that along with his the power of his combined of the Fantastic Four. He's thrown down pretty good with Tigra. And this whole time, the Rat Pack is watching this go down and they're like, this is freaking crazy. Like, as soon as what was his name? Plague is now a Super Skrull. Let's just get the hell out of here.
He just tried to kill us, so when he kills these people, he's going to just turn back on us again.
Yeah, and they're like, okay, we're out of here. Red Wolf, not looking great.
Under Tuska? Or just in general?
Just in general.
Yeah, well, I mean, he doesn't have superpowers.
Right.
So he's trying to fight a big robot, and he's got weapons that aren't even from the century he's working in.
He's just, like, trying to punch him to death, and he's got, like, freaking Lobo, this dog, this wolf, is, like, biting his leg to, like, keep him off balance, and it's just like, man. Red Wolf, and I think Tiger even makes a comment about how, I could really use some backup here, but, you know, Red Wolf's trying not to die, I think, right? Basically, how she puts it. She's beat by the Super Skrull.
Well, I mean, she's just completely outclassed. They both are.
Yeah, big time. The robot is just about to finish off Red Wolf, and she kind of comes from nowhere and busts him up.
Just, like, rips him to shreds in one swell swoop.
That's right, because he was about to finish Tiger off, and Lobo.
Hold on. What I liked is that he not only had he beaten Tigra, but he said he's about to smash her face to pieces, if I remember correct, or something like really graphic like that verbally. And he's got his big thing fist ready to do it. And then Lobo comes and snatches up the soul catcher in his teeth and runs off, and Super Troll just casts her aside like she's nothing again, goes after the dog, and that frees Tigra up to just savage this robot like it was nothing. Just completely outclasses
Red Bull.
Yeah,
she like kicks it and just it explodes to pieces. Yeah. It's, the line you were looking for was Super Skrull says, "I'll crush your skull like an overripe melon."
Yeah.
That's graphic. So he's holding her by the hair. He's got her by the hair with one hand and then has the thing arm getting ready to bust her upside the head. Oh, yeah. So anyway, so Lobo
By the way, we forgot to mention too, Jack Kirby drew the cover.
Is that a Kirby?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's Kirby.
Definitely peculiar seeing Kirby draw two of those three characters. Yes. Super Skrull, fine.
Yep.
Tigra and Red Wolf, what the hell?
Lobo bails him out. Lobo bails him out a few times. This wolf is pretty miraculous.
This is one of those situations kind of like the Quality Manhunter where the canine is really outclassing the hero. He's the smart one. He's the one who figured out how to get Super Skrull off their backs, for starters.
Well, and he was the one that found when the original base was all blowing to pieces, they were like, she was like, they mentioned something about like some sort of underground train. And he's like, Lobo, find it. And Lobo just like leads him straight to it. Yeah.
Excellent. Timmy's trapped in the whale?
Yeah.
Well, she even has a line where it's like, Red Tin Tin has nothing on him or something like that.
I think she says that a couple times.
Yeah.
He's no Rin Tin Tin. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's where we are. Okay. So in the background, you see Jules Banyan is sort of like, oh man, the jig is up. What is going down? I got to get out of here before Tigra sees me.
And then he's never mentioned again.
That's why I'm like, okay, so where does
great
it go?
Big hanging plot thread. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're sprinting off to trying to get to, because the Super Skrull obviously is chasing after Lobo.
Catches Lobo, blasts him with Johnny Storm style heat blasts.
He says, "Die, wretched beast, burn!" And shoots a huge fire blast at him. And Red Wolf's like, "He killed Lobo of all the dirty, vicious." And they're like, "Oh shit, no, Lobo's like right there."
Yeah. Lobo just walks up behind Red Wolf and Tigra like it's nothing.
It's like that last two. And I was like, "What are you talking about? I'm right here. And here's the staff you guys wanted." And he's like, "Oh, God."
But in silent doggy eye motions and stuff, like not posture.
Right. He didn't actually go, "Oh, hey, guys. Hey, here's that staff. That's my Lobo. Right? You can bark." And I go, "Hey, guys. Here's the soul catcher. You wanted that soul catcher? Here it is." So anyway, they get the soul catcher right as the police show up and are like, "We knew it. It's you two. You've got the stolen artifact."
It's the Indian and the woman. They're trying to muzzle Lobo. And Red Wolf's like, "Lobo will never be chained." Lobo takes off and the cop starts shooting the dog with his police revolver. He's like, "I swore I heard it five times. I know I did."
He's like, "I will never allow Lobo to be chained. Run, brother." And the cop's like, "Hey, Sarge, that animal really is a wolf. And he's getting away. Bring him down." We can't have a wolf running loose on these streets.
Were these the same cops that went after Howard the Duck?
Yeah, these typical cops. They
shoot to kill.
Pull the guns out and just start firing like mad.
But again, Lobo is obviously like Ghost Dog. He's like a total badass.
Yeah, Lobo was by far the best character.
He's the star of the book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's funny. They bring them up on charges again. And sort of like
Lobo? What charges did they bring Lobo up on?
No, not Lobo. Lobo got free. Red Wolf and Tigra. And they
and Tigra wants to just scratch her way clear, and Red Wolf is like, "Oh," or who actually calls him just Red, talks her out of it. It's like, "Chill out, baby, chill, baby, chill."
He's like, yeah, just get in the paddy wagon. We'll go down. It looks like they're in night court.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, and finally, I guess one of the captains or whatever just called and was like, "Oh, no, he's an Avenger. Let's just let him go again." It's like, it's like the best. Becoming an Avenger is the best thing that ever happened.
Right, no kidding.
And here they just hand him his tomahawk back in the middle of the police station. Tomahawk.
It's like tomahawk, the dirty South tomahawk.
Tomahawk. Take his tomahawk.
One more tomahawk. This guy's like way accommodating, too. He's like, nice.
"Hey, pardon me, Red Wolf. Isn't that stolen Indian relic?" And he's like, "Oh, yes, we recovered it from the raiders who massacred the village." "Oh, the Rat Pack, yeah. Man, I have a stolen goods report here on that one. Can I see it for a moment?" He's like, "Well, sure, go ahead and take it." And the guy's like, "Thank you, Indian. Thank you very much." Because, of course, the Super Skrull can shapeshift.
Right. And he's like, "No need for this disguise anymore." And he throws the desk aside. And there's the corpse of the cop he's been playing the whole time.
Yeah. Underneath like a desk.
Yeah.
Jacked up.
Just have the corpse stuffed under there. It's interesting reading this after reading The Annihilation. animation stuff, because you were reminded, wow, this guy really is a murderous scumbag.
It's, yeah, the Super Scroll was kind of a bad dude. So he kind of explains that he got his ass whipped by Captain Marvel, mm-hmm. and he's sort of been, you know, recovering, and that's why he's had these clowns going around getting all these serums for him and stuff. Yeah. He's basically been healing himself.
I'm betting that was the original intention, but it does do a nice job of explaining that stuff.
Yeah, it does.
The rest of the book wasn't doing that.
Right.
The rest
they were of the never, series, I mean. They were never explaining why the hell the Super Scroll needed a band of clowns
right.
to steal Native American secrets. And
right.
The serums or it didn't make any
well,
sense.
Well, and as soon as they got the Soul Catcher, they didn't even mention any of these other heists that they were doing.
Right,
so
exactly.
I'm glad that Shooter made a point of wrapping that up.
And there's this awesome scene where Tigress slashes at Super Scroll, but he uses like the Mr. Fantastic bendy neck to kind of stretch his neck out and bend it a little bit. So she misses. And then he just whips their asses again, man.
Yeah, I kept waiting for this to be the story where I'm like, man, no wonder people don't respect the Super Scroll. He got beat by Red Wolf and Tigress. Like, no, he did not.
No, he just trashes them.
Yeah.
So then she finally has this massive feral.
Oh, we forgot to mention the part, too, that when the police show up, again, inexplicably, Super Scroll turns himself into a bum using his shape-shifting powers instead of just killing all the cops and making off with the Soul Catcher.
Oh, I thought that he had just left.
No, he's the bum poking around in the fire with a stick. Okay. They made too big a big deal about, maybe we should arrest the bum.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know there was a bum there. I just thought that he had Splitsville and a bum would just happen to be in the area. Because he was
he's poking around looking for the fucking Soul Catcher.
He's all like, oh.
He doesn't know Lobo's alive, apparently.
Yeah, because he was like, hey, that's that Soul Catcher. You guys stole it. You guys are guilty. He's like, it wasn't us. It was the Super Scroll. And then he looks over and it's just the bum. Yeah, so anyway, so Tiger at this point just has this massive feral fit. Like, she just, like, lets it totally consume her. And she jumps going, EYARR-R-R. So she leaps at Super Scroll, who's holding the Soul Catcher, and is like, all right, time to get eradicated. And she says, oh, no, he says, before I've stopped you with the energy from this wand, Beast Woman, this time for the first time, I will... Never mind, fuck this panel. This doesn't make any fucking sense. Anyway, the next panel, he says, and rip the essence from your existence from the face of this planet. And he fires this... He doesn't really fire the staff. He's sort of just holding it over his head. And she says, stopped cold, I felt my soul shredded inside of me. But the old switcheroo happens. The Soul Catcher, I guess, detects the true evil inside of the Super Scroll and pulls his soul into the Soul Catcher.
Yeah.
And what it does is, so like, the Soul Catcher, it's like these little blocks, and each block is like a different face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they show that now the Super Scroll's face is the top block. So I guess it adds a block each time.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a cool.
Oh, yeah, it looks kind of neat.
So anyway, afterwards, you know, she and Red are kind of just talking, and she's like, you know what?
Well, don't forget the part where they run away because the cops were going to blame them for the death of their captain.
Oh, right. Again, so they jump out. And
so they run away, and they're camping out in the desert, and Tigra's like, the Soul Catcher, I could feel it trying to take my soul, but then when I became a full beast, it decided to go after the Super Scroll instead, and it just proves what a monster I am. And it's Red Wolf that puts forth the theory that the Soul Catcher just sought out the evil. It found the true evil. We don't know for a fact that that's the reason why they sucked on Super Scroll.
But she says it gives her a glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so Red Wolf says, we have to get back to the city and clear our names. And she says, I can't, Red. I just can't face the human world yet. Not on those terms. But I've got to find out who and what I am first. But you've given me a glimmer of hope. Thanks, Red. And it says, the end? Then it says, sadly, yes, this is it. Pilgrims, the last issue. Marvel Chillers is being shelved to make way for the latest inspirations from the House of Ideas. So, don't worry about her. She will return.
Well, it probably didn't help that they started out the series with frickin' Madra the Mystic.
Yeah, you're kind you got a loaded deck there. God, what a crazy band of characters this is.
Mm-hmm.
Red Wolf, Tiger, and the Super Scroll. What the fuck?
It's the 70s, all right. Yeah, see, this is an excellent example of Bronze Age storytelling, because the thing of it is, each one of these issues, regardless of the creative team, I enjoyed reading each of the issues.
Yeah.
It was amusing. It was a nice little bit of pastime. It's only when you take it as a whole and you realize that because this is a bi-monthly book with a fill-in issue, 10 months of somebody's reading life was devoted to this story.
Bad.
And it doesn't really make a lot of sense, and it doesn't have really any meaning. Ultimately, you don't advance the characters of Red Wolf or Tigra any. Super Scroll's kind of just there. It still isn't really a great explanation for why he has to have this Native American artifact, or as they like to say all over the book, Indian. I didn't realize how much I've been conditioned to think of East Indians as Indians until I was reading this book, because it used to be Indian default means, you know, Native American. My brain just doesn't work that way anymore.
Well, yeah, let's face it. I mean, I know more Indians than I know Native Americans.
Yeah.
So it just, it's weird. Whenever I hear Indian, I think of, you know, Raj over in Risk. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like or Pontosh over in IT. Like, mm-hmm. that's who I think of when I think of Indian. I don't think, you know,
right.
insert random
Well, that,
American
and, you
name.
Know, it, and even Native American, they don't like so much. It's like you want to identify the individual tribes as well. He's a Cheyenne, by the way. Okay. So I one would expect that he's avenging a Cheyenne Indian reservation that's been massacred by Super Skrull and the Rat Pack. So yeah, but it was fine. It was nice. I'm glad Tiger had her little series going for a bit there. I wish things had worked out a little bit better for her. But again, this was sort of a, like I said, very entertaining as individual story, individual issues. Just doesn't work very great as well as a whole.
Yeah. Well, and I will say I enjoyed the Isabella stuff more. The first three issues. This last issue, you can tell, is kind of a
we gotta wrap this sucker up.
But Shooter does a pretty good job.
Oh yeah.
Of at least tying up all the loose ends.
He obviously read the previous issues and made a point of addressing a lot of concerns for anybody who really cared about the story.
Right. And you can tell, you know, they kind of had to just abandon the whole, you know, Tiger. The whole point of this was Tiger was supposed to meet Leon, who was going to help her turn into a human. You know what I mean? Like, right. that all just completely
went out the window. Yeah.
You don't see Tumalo in the last two issues, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Or you see her briefly in the third issue.
Yeah.
Or issue six, third mm-hmm. part of the story. And in the seventh issue, there's no mention of Tumalo. There's no, like I said, those two panels of, what's his name? Home Dude Lawyer.
Right.
Who was allegedly a turncoat.
Julie Banyan or whatever.
They never tell you why or if he knew he was working with the Super Skrull and none of that all goes away. But the Isabella stuff, he does a really good job of using her inner monologue to kind of drive the story.
Yes.
From panel to panel. And I don't know why it works so well with Tiger. Like, I think on almost everything we've read of hers, you've got this inner monologue going.
Well, she kind of comes across like the old Gumshoe. She's like, for her adventures are kind of like detective stories, and she's got to have her internal narrative that's telling you how she feels about the stuff that's unfolding and how perplexed she is about this particular mystery. You know, it helps. It gives her an identity where a lot of, you know, she started this whole thing with the cat ladies, and there's tons and tons of cat ladies in comics these days. And most of the time they're either seductresses or they're feral, clawy badasses. But they're not a distinct entity. There's just, they're the cat lady in a particular book, where in this one, she has a lot of those qualities she had when she was the vigilante, the cat. She has a personality. She has that sort of sarcastic vibe about her that she had in the old series. I do definitely enjoy that aspect.
Yeah, and then you also get the wrestling with the feral side that she's kind of constantly having to deal with too.
Right.
You know, so that she kind of has to explain it because you know, when she's just fighting somebody and she's already in cat form, it's kind of hard to convey when she's gone from
full cat
Rear Nelson from just to
catty.
Full cat, right? So she has to be saying it in her head like, I'm losing it. I can feel I'm going full feral now, and then she freaks out. You know, so I think that works. And like you said, I think it is, these kind of have that detective style take to them. And a lot of times, you know, she's kind of working alone. So she's just kind of roaming the streets alone or whatever she's doing. She's just thinking to herself, going through her thoughts. And even then, I feel like in a lot of these comics, if she was by herself, in a lot of comics, they would just have the word balloon. She was talking to herself, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't, it's just, there's something different about it, the way it goes.
There's a lot of caption abuse in modern comics because the word balloons were abused in their day. They were definitely overused as an exposition device to where you're not really getting any insight into the character. It's just a way for them to get around telling you something that you needed to know about the story. But nowadays they do these captions on everything, and sometimes a simple word balloon would do the job better instead of having them caption. Sometimes you'll have whole stories of nothing but captions.
Yeah.
And I don't know, just there's something specific to comics. There's something comic booky about a good word balloon, and you should use whichever one works best for what you're trying to do. I do think that the captions worked well here because you needed that detachment. You get the sense of Tigra telling the story to somebody else after the fact using the captions.
Right.
So you don't have the immediacy.
Otherwise, if she were walking around thinking to herself, you'd have the little cloud.
Right.
The cloud ones.
Well, not just that, though, but it would change the tense of what she's saying. It would change the tone. I like that the captions allow her to be reflective about what happened and kind of give you like, oh, yeah, that's I really screwed up at that particular point in time.
Right.
It does take away from the immediacy of the story because you know that she's telling you something from a future point. I think it's more important to just enjoy the story and how it's being told. And that's definitely in service to that. It makes you more involved with the character because if it was just pure action, it wouldn't have the same impact. You need her color commentary of her adventure.
And again, because of the conflict going on, she's got things going on in her head, so it makes sense that she's either walking walking you back through, or walking herself back through it. I don't know, just it seems to work with the character. And again, it seems like in everything of hers that we've read so far, that's how she operates. So as soon as I'm reading a Tigra story or Greer Nelson slash Greer Grant, mm-hmm. I'm kind of...
She's Greer Grant Nelson. Right. I prefer the alliteration, but really Greer Nelson is the name they use the most often from this point onward.
So I don't know, it just works. And I liked it. And you kind of lose that in that last issue, but overall, I thought it was a perfectly fine little story.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think, though, the reason why I bought the book was for Red Wolf when I was on my big Red Wolf kick at that time period. And you could take him out of the story and you really wouldn't lose anything.
Well, you'd lose Lobo.
You'd lose Lobo, who was definitely key.
Yeah.
But he just like reinforces things that Tigra would have done already. So he doesn't contribute a lot. You know, he helps to free her from the base, and Lobo does a lot, but otherwise he's kind of pointless.
But I did like, you know, the
whole... It feels like he's a value-added character. Like, oh, let's see if we can get the Tigra fans and Red Wolf fans to buy this, and maybe we'll have enough readership to sustain.
Another part of these stories I did like that they keep being in the wrong place at the wrong time, uh-huh. where the cops keep finding them, and they're like, Red Wolf, they think Red Wolf, they think she did it, and Red Wolf thinks she did it, and then mm-hmm. you kind of find out, Lobo told her.
Right.
Lobo was the one that did it. But for a while there, he suspected she did it, and then the cops find him again, hey, you guys blowing up that place, you guys were the ones that did it. Mm-hmm. You've got the stolen staff, and then they were about to, then they caught them for killing that chief,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, and that plays with the unlucky gumshoe aspect as well, where, you know, they're just in time for the villains to come take him for a ride and beat him up and leave him on the side of the road. Oh, now the cops are arresting me right when I'm trying to make a breakthrough on the case, and you definitely get that influence in there.
Yeah.
On the Marvel Superheroes podcast, episode 80, the last episode to feature Red Wolf, we got retweets from Between the Pages, Siskoid, and Talk Nerdy to Me, as well as likes from Alan Middleton, Backseat Directors, Biko Django, Bob Buster, Bronze Age Babies, Brian Bayer, Chad Thorson, Gandinevis, Rebel, Charles Griffith, Chris at Bad Books for Beginners, Chris Sheehan, Cerebus Film, The Comic Book Vault, David Fior, D.B. Besson, Dean Robert Willits, Dwight L. McPherson, Dirk Ashton, Ava Zarneka Art, Good Times Great Movies, Gore Tolton, Infinite Monkey Comics, Jasper's Outfits, Jeffrey Brown, Jeffrey Whitworth, Jim at Canada Daredevil, Jim Escaville, Lost in Time, Max Romero, Master of the Universe Cast, Nerdfix Strangers, Patrick and Dennis, The Podcast Radio Network, Quanta Academia, Reezy Rico, Relatively Geeky Podcast Network, Ryan Daly, Sean Merrick, Slangwood Resists, Son of Cthulhu, Steve Sellers, Sully Jr., Terrence Castingway, Terry Dowman, Varangian Vigilante, Willie Yarbrough, and the Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace Podcast. Chris at Bad Books for Beginners said, hey, I know that dude, check it out, and tweeted a cover image from Avengers issue 80, which featured the coming of Red Wolf. Pretty cool cover. Got Lobo sicking Captain America and the Vision, as well as Iron Man and Thor. Even cooler, Odell Abner Dracula found a Red Wolf commission that was done by Bob Layton in the style of what would have been the Red Wolf miniseries if it had come out, featuring the future version that was shown in the Hercules miniseries. That'll be on our website. Go ahead and check that out. Odell also asks, you guys seen this? Kind of neat. P.S. The Red Wolf modernization ideas you guys are spitballing sound a lot like Skrull Kill Crew. That miniseries wasn't entirely outside of my mind when I was suggesting it. Joe Crawford wrote, saw this pop up as I was listening to the last Spawn episode. Always really liked the Red Wolf character. Excited to hear this one. Lost in Time wrote, looking forward to this. Not enough Red Wolf talk out there. And hey, now you got a double shot. Ryan Daly wrote, always liked the look of this character. The shadow covering his eyes gives him a distinctly cowled appearance, like a savage Batman. Hey, wait a minute. DC totally stole this look for the prehistoric Batman and Morrison's Return of Bruce Wayne. And he tweeted a picture. You can see that on the website as well. Martin Gray wrote, I never knew there were so many Red Wolves. And there's a whole tangent on that between Ryan Daly and Keechee Baker. Randy Caldwell wrote, I'm sure Red Wolf has a sweater for night missions. Maybe he's like Hawkman and doesn't get cold. Oh, Red Wolf, Arrak, Flying Fox, Shirtless Native Dudes, Roy Thomas. Finally, Unearthly Visions wrote, I like the They Live Red Wolf headcanon. Sounds like something Warren Ellis could take to bonkers places. Finally, the Mary Marvel Marching Society, 20th Century Geek, 108 Sage, Ange, Maddie Shapirak, Blue Girl, Bobcat at Bumwine Bob, Bone Dragon Comics, Brody's Kitchen, Cadaver Cast, Caroline Wells, Cash Flag, Chronosphere Fiction, The Cinebud Podcast, Comic Reflections, Comics in the Golden Age, Daniel French, Darren and Rune Sutherland, Derek and Matt Podcast, Dr. G Nerdologist, Fanholes Podcast, Graphic Novelism, Gregory Litchfield, History of Comics on Film, Joe Crawford, Just in Time with the JNT Baggers, Justice First Dawn Sean, Keith G. Baker, Kyle Benning Likes Comics, The List Game, Marvel Superheroes, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Mike Ratliff, Mr. Rogers' Stunt Double, Odell Abner Dracula, The Pod Stuff Podcast, Rad Adventures Podcast Network, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Ryan Daly, Sassy Animal, Trekker Talk, Two Snaps Photography, Unearthly Visions, Warlord Worlds, and Zena Schultz.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. The views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
So where do we go from here with Tigra?
Let me look, actually. I don't think we're going to have anything to read in the immediate future. I think this actually helps to close out our intended coverage of Tigra for a while.
Until we hit Avengers, probably?
Probably so. West Coast Avengers. Wait, was she on the East Coast team before West Coast, or West Coast where she got involved with the Avengers as a whole?
Don't remember.
After Marvel Chillers, she's in a Marvel 2-in-1 with The Thing.
I think I was in a Marvel 2-in-1 with The Thing.
Mm-hmm. She had a little run on Fantastic Four, a Marvel team-up, which I think is that one that Ange was telling us about.
Yeah.
Yeah. An issue of Marvel Premiere Magazine. She really bounces around. An Amazing Spider-Man annual. And then she does end up in the Avengers. So she turns up in the Avengers book in 1981 as part of what looks to be a new team. The Old Order Changeth.
What issue was that? 200?
210. Where are you at on your Avengers overview right now?
Nearing the 160s. And I'm about to hit the Korvac saga.
And if you want to talk about an interesting team, or a creative team, it's Bill Mantlow and Gene Colan with Dan Green inks.
Holy shit.
Wait, is that the one? No. That must have been a fill-in issue. Hold on a second. No, it's Jim Shooter, Gene Colan, and Dan Green.
Still sounds like it's a fill-in issue.
It's definitely...
I mean, maybe not the writer, but artist-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in 161.
Okay, so you're still pretty far away from
that. Yeah. Like I said, I got to go through Korvac Saga. That's the next big one.
Okay, I think that's that.